Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Wild weather over the weekend here in the U.S., especially in this area. We'll have some details about that. Did you get a chance to watch the NBA All-Star game over the weekend? It was not much of a game. Generation Z, that's a new generation, by the way. They're finding out new and different ways to hang out from previous generations. Might be some repercussions from it. And a recent surge in programs about the UK and US under Nazi occupation is changing the way people view the Nazis. That and more, this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us, Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm, and we like the emails. You can send those in. Email us comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau here today on this Monday. President's Day today.
Yes, it is.
So any big plans?
Nothing presidential, I guess.
Nothing too fancy. We did have a lot of rain here overnight in the Oklahoma City metro area. So for those in the area, probably enjoyed that a little bit. Some pretty good thunder, too, which is always fun. I like it. Kids, you know, they have split opinions. Occasionally they like it. Occasionally they're terrified.
Yeah, it was refreshing last night to get some rain and precipitation and some thunder. Yeah, I haven't been a kid for so long. I do forget that some people find it frightening.
We had one that was so loud it made the house shake.
Yeah,
and you know it's coming because you see the flash right by the window, and you know a big one's coming. And so it was pretty loud, and a lot of rain. Some places overnight here in the metro got, well, between a half and almost 2 inches of rain, and that fell, and I don't know what it fell in, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours, give or take. So it was right. Coming down pretty good. We needed it. We were in fire danger, you know, hazard, high hazard, and we've just got such unseasonably warm weather. It's going to be 72 today, getting up. I think on Thursday it's up into the 80s, and that makes me nervous because if it's that hot now, what happens in the summer?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be an inferno. It does remind me of a story in college. It was late, and I was walking back to my dorm, and there was a lightning storm. It wasn't raining. It was just some really loud lightning. I'm like, oh, on the walk back, because I'm a man, I'm not going to run. And I had to walk across a field, and it felt like there was a thunder right above me, and it looked like daylight, and it was so loud it hurt my ears. And like, forget that, I'm going to run. So I just ran the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And you have to do that, especially crossing open space, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you have to be really careful. I've had a few of those too, just heading to the car or something, and a flash is so close to you that I don't know how far away, but it just has, like you say, that bright light, and, you know, makes you move a little quicker.
Yeah.
Got to get moving. There was actually pretty severe weather in Texas as well. This is all part of that storm that came through California, and San Antonio, Texas got hit. The damage and injuries reported after a tornado, they think, hit San Antonio, Texas. Severe storms rolled through Texas Monday morning, and a confirmed, well, now it's confirmed, I guess, tornado left widespread damage in northern San Antonio. February tornado, a little different. More than 100 structures were damaged when a severe storm hit just south of San Antonio International Airport, ABC News said. Most of the damaged buildings were homes. An elementary school was also damaged, the report added. So no school for them today, probably. No school anyway. President's Day, but maybe a couple more days.
Yeah, no literal school for that.
Yeah.
We had really odd weather patterns lately, and especially with all the disasters happening nationwide, especially when summer hits or it's warmer, we get tornado season, hurricane season. It just lining up for even a more disastrous time period.
Could be. It'd be interesting to see. California this week's got more trouble coming, according to AccuWeather. Heavy rain, mountain snow, and high winds will pound the northwestern United States early this week. Most significant impacts targeting northern California. Storms have resumed their track across the region following a brief break from heavy precipitation. Of course, they had a lot over the weekend, killed some people. There's a big sinkhole that formed on a highway. Two cars fell in it. They had footage
right.
of that.
Yeah.
Pretty, I mean, you don't expect that. I mean, well, when it rains here, we get big potholes, but it hasn't been a sinkhole yet.
Yeah, well, we just, people in Oklahoma, especially in Logan County, have learned to drive out of the potholes.
Yeah,
you just so.
Get a gun it, go down and up. Yeah, no, you couldn't get out of this one. This one was a bad one. They say storms have resumed their track. A widespread 2 to 6 inches of rain can fall across the San Francisco Bay region and part of the Sacramento Valley through Tuesday. However, local amounts could be 8 inches or more. 8 inches of rain in 24 hours? It's got to go somewhere. That's trouble, including Santa Cruz Mountains and over the Feather River Basin. While the storms will bring the risk of mudslides and avalanches, the greatest threat to lives and property will be from flooding, according to AccuWeather senior meteorologist Alex Sosnowski. So they've had a rough weekend, I guess, and they're getting more rain coming through. So rain's great. You like it, but then it needs to stop or you're going to have problems.
Yeah, especially in California where they've had perpetual drought, it seems, for the last 5 years. But when they do get the rain, it's too much, and it's in the wrong place. It ruins their infrastructure, breaks dams. It just completely defeats the whole purpose of having it in the first place. It's definitely not a healing rain. It's more of a curse than a blessing.
Yeah, and we talked a couple of weeks ago about this new gold rush in California where they're paying loggers a lot of money to take the dead trees out because they're afraid they're going to fall on infrastructure, roads, power lines. And you have to wonder how much this is going to cause problems with that. That much rain comes in and gets that soil so muddy and loose and those trees are already dead. I don't know. Maybe it won't affect it, but I don't think it'll make it any better. They're not coming back to life, right? So bad situation there. So, yeah, weird weather, really strange weather pattern. We've got a really good write-up at thetrumpet.com on why natural disasters. And that's always something people wonder about when they see things happen. So check that out at thetrumpet.com. It's a freebie. Speaking of disasters, I watched the NBA All-Star game last night, at least part of it. And, well, what's the point? They don't even play defense anymore. Now, when I was a kid, and hear me out. I know everybody thinks things were better when they were kids. But when I was a kid, I always looked forward to that game. Because it used to be on in the afternoon, from what I recall. And they would just introduce the teams and they'd play. They didn't have, you know, an hour pregame of rapping or whatever they were doing before the game. And they'd go out and they'd play hard. And each guy wanted to kind of show, hey, he was better than, Karl Malone versus Barkley, Jordan against Magic. I mean, he wanted to see who could really put on a show. Not that they played super hard defense, but a little more. No defense at all last night. Anthony Davis sets the record for most points scored in an All-Star game. It was over 50. Literally, you know what? You and me, we could have probably gotten 30 points in that game last night. If they're not going to guard you and you can just take open layups, I mean, how many could you make? I could probably get 30 points.
Well, I appreciate you lumping me in with that, but let's go with 10 points for me.
Hey, still.
Judging my record on open layup attempts. But yeah, I didn't watch it, but I saw some response in it. Most of it was pretty negative. And because I love All-Star games, especially because you see the best all together, and they're just playing one game, and it's usually not necessarily high stakes, but just some excitement there. But lately, it's just become so commercialized. You have like the celebrity All-Star game. You have comedians and rappers getting into it, and it completely, it's not about the sport anymore. It's about the personality and it's about the style when people just probably want to see them play and just do their best out there for one game because they get paid a lot of money to do that. And but I think it's like that with any sport, including football, the Pro Bowl, and even hockey. They had to change the format because the players, everyone was just sitting in center ice cherry picking.
Right.
There was really no game going on.
They don't want to get hurt, and I get that. But at the same time, you get the best players in the world together. You want to see some really exciting action. And it's not exciting to watch a guy that's 6'11 dunk a basketball.
Yeah.
That's like, you could watch, I'll do a webcam of me dunking on my kid's Nerf hoop in his bedroom. It's the same thing. It's no big deal. What's amazing about those plays is when there is defense and you make a great play to free yourself for that dunk. So Anthony Davis scoring, I forget what it was, 52 points, I think it was, somewhere in there. So what? It didn't mean anything. It was like like you said, cherry picking. Throw it down there, dunk, 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 and I don't know. Not much of a game, as far as I'm concerned.
Although if you did dunk on your son's over your son on his Nerf basketball hoop, you probably would become a viral superstar.
Yeah, that's true. Like dunking on kids. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it was I didn't watch the whole thing. I only watched the first half of the game. The final score was 192-182. Are you serious? I mean, that's just unbelievable. One thing I did find distasteful in the beginning, they were doing the national anthem and they would show on the Jumbotron different celebrities that were there. And the crowd would cheer for the celebrities during the national anthem. What does that have to do? I just didn't think that was appropriate. Typically, they just put up shots of the military. Now, they did put up a shot of the military, and they did applaud that. But even there, I feel like it's not time to applaud people and it's just to sit there and have a proper respect for the country. So I didn't like that, especially when it was some, like, I don't know, questionable celebrities, I would say. And then the crowd starts cheering in the middle of the national anthem. I didn't like that.
Yeah, it does go against propriety and the proper protocol during any national anthem. It's supposed to be silent or singing, listening to it, looking at the flag, depending on whatever country you're in. But yeah, it's because you have the whole game, the whole few hours to cheer. Just have a few moments of respect for the country, and I think that's the whole idea behind it.
They did the starting lineups twice. They like they did this whole thing where they introduced them. Then they went away to a commercial break, and then they came back, and there was a pre-produced introduction. They used to just call their name, and they'd run up and high-five their team and then get on with the activity.
Right.
Isn't that just what you do? You want to play the game. You know, I don't care about all the buildup. But anyway, yeah. I think people are getting upset with it, so I don't know if they'll keep doing those or not. Major League Baseball, they have something on the line because the winning team, I think, gets home field advantage in the World Series, I believe.
Okay.
Something like that. There's something on the line. And so maybe they need to start doing that. Put something on the line to make these guys care about it.
Yeah, I think that would be really beneficial. Just because they're not playing to please their vanity. They're playing to because people like watching them. Like that, it's for the fans, really. Not necessarily because we want to hear their names called out four or five times before the game even starts. And in hockey, they had that problem, too, and the way they fixed it was they changed the format to three-on-three tournaments, and it covers 2 days, I think, and they play little mini tournaments, and then the final two teams play, and the winners do get something. Like, as you win, each player on the team gets something. I don't think it's money. I forget exactly what it is. But they changed the format, and it's actually really exciting and competitive now. So I don't know if they'll have to either put something at stake or just make it a better format or something like that.
Yeah, I think guys used to have a little more pride, like self-respect. Like, I'm not going to let that guy come in here and dunk. You know, I'm going to block his shot.
Yeah.
And that was the fun of it. Who's going to get the better of who? So, anyway, didn't care for it. I don't know. Probably a lot of basketball fans out there, so you may have different opinions about it. Yeah, they're amazing athletes. They made some amazing plays, but nobody was guarding them. So, I don't, you know, okay. There you go. The new generation, by the way, is Generation Z. Is this the last generation? Has to be, right? There's nothing after Z.
Yeah, unless you go to the Greek alphabet.
Yeah. So this is it. The last hope for man. Wall Street Journal says, for Generation Z, quote unquote, live chilling, which is what we're doing now, replaces hanging out in person. This is the way the new generation is getting together, they say. Teens are finding their friends via video chat in apps such as House Party, Fam, and Kik, K-I-K. You ever hear of those?
A couple of them, yes, but I had no idea that's what they were.
You're pretty hip. Nah, I hadn't heard of them. Almost every day, they say, when they get home from school, these teenagers, age 16 and 14, open the app House Party, where they can video chat with up to 7 of their friends at once. I don't think I had 7 friends in high school. The sisters, well, there you go, they're sisters, so maybe they can share the friends, who live in Danville, California, use it to socialize and collaborate on homework. Oh, sure they do. Collaborate on homework? Right. For 15 minutes to an hour. When they first open it, they may be chatting with just one friend, but everyone they're connected to on House Party gets a push alert that they're, quote, in the house. So, you know, you get push alerts if you sign up for them. With a lot of apps, they'll tell you, hey, something's going on, which those become very annoying.
Right.
You can get them from news sites, sports, weather, whatever the case may be. Sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're not. But those are push alerts. I wonder if they do that for security systems as well. Someone's in the house.
Get a push alert.
Could be good or bad, depending on the situation. But so all the friends get the push alert, and then the room fills up. It might even spill over into other rooms, growing organically, just like a real house party, they say. Teens have been hanging out online for 20 years, if you can believe that. But in 2017, they're doing it on group video chat apps in a way that feels like the real thing, not just a poor substitute, they say. Ranging in age from adolescence to their early 20s, the group, loosely defined as Generation Z, which you're not in it, Abe. You're a little too old for
this.
That's
right, yeah.
You're Generation Y, I guess.
Yeah, I barely missed out on the opportunity to be in Generation Z.
Yeah.
Or Z, I guess, in Canada. Generation Z.
I'm Gen X, so I always thought that was cooler. X is a cool letter. It says these young people are leaving the apps open in order to hang out casually with peers in a trend some call live chilling. So they'll leave the app open with their friends, and they're just open kind of all the time. So you're just always live chilling, as the expression is. These apps, they say, make sense now in part because more teens than ever have access to smartphones. And that's, they're not using personal computers, they're using their smartphones. In 2015, the Pew Research Center reported 73% of U.S. teens have access to a smartphone, and that figure is growing. Boy, you hate to be in the other percentage, right?
Yeah.
All your friends have it, and you don't? You got the old flip phone or nothing?
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be hard to fit in, but it's going to be a lot easier to stay out of trouble.
Yeah, this there's a few different ideas about this, and to me it seems... I can't think of a better English word than lame.
Because, is that lame chilling?
Yes, lame chilling. Because, I mean, when I was growing up, not that I hated going home, but it was always kind of special to go to someone's house, or it was just nice to go to someone's house. See,
it was an event.
Yeah, you go to someone's house, you spend some time there, you eat their food, you watch their movies, you play their video games. You're not just immersed in your own environment. You have to deal with different people. You have to take the subway, the bus, get picked up by the parents, however you get there. It's an experience in itself. And you're not just sitting at home in your room just video chatting people. To me, it just seems like a poor substitute, and I'm sure the next generation, whatever generation that they come up with the name for, may look up back on that as something that was lame, perhaps. But also... I think anyone can attest to, if you get a bunch of unsupervised teenagers together, it only leads to trouble and some pretty terrible consequences sometimes.
Right. We've heard stories, they're all in the media, about bullying online. It's hard to get away from that. So there would be a lot of potential problems here, for sure. But here's one that's a definite problem that everybody will admit to. Studies examining time use since 1965 show a significant decline in active time, accelerating in the mid-1990s, which really, of course, is probably because of the internet, to the point that young people today are sedentary for more than 10 hours a day. They say we're at the point now that technology is driving the trend. So if you even forget about all the other things that people would debate, positives, negatives, the kids aren't moving like they used to, and that causes health problems.
Yeah, I mean, these apps now, I'm sure it was a good idea in the management, and it's taking off, as this article attests to, but the consequences of it are that you're allowing kids to have a habitual stationary lifestyle, where they just... Everything they could ever want is in their room. Their smartphones, a computer, a TV, video game console, now a portal to friends anywhere. So there's no encouragement to move, just for physical exercise, but also just move outside the world that is your bedroom or your house. And so it just creates, I think, kids not only with just physical problems, but also a limited grasp of what the real world is like.
Yeah, so it's really an interesting thing. We have, I'm sure, some listeners in Generation Z, certainly some parents of people in Generation Z, and so it is something to consider. What do you do? How much time would you allow for whatever the activity is, because that is always the one of the big things that I notice. I have kids, and occasionally let them do a few things, but if it's too, if it it becomes more habitual, I try to cut it off. Hey, can I look at that thing? You know what? Why don't you go outside? You know, maybe looking at whatever they want to look at isn't bad in and of itself, but it can become consuming, and that's where it begins an issue because, you know, it's a nice afternoon. Would it be better to sit on the couch here in the darkened room, or would it be better to go outside? Go outside. Get some vitamin D.
Yeah.
Mow the lawn. Can't mow the lawn on an app. Probably you can. There's probably something where you could use a robot, but anyway, if there is, I don't want to know about it. Push the mower.
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to the old adage, moderation in all things. Yeah. I mean, you can use technology in an obsessive way, but even reading books can be a negative too. If all you do is read books, you don't go outside or communicate with people, that's a negative against your development too. So,
and then there are those that only want to be outside and they don't want to, you know, do other things. So yeah, it can go a lot of ways. Moderation, yeah. Anyway, interesting. See how the technology is changing things. For the people that are stationary all the time, they should. I saw this headline today. I didn't look at all the details. It's really disturbing. But a lady in her mid-70s, she sat in basically the same chair for a year. I don't know how, and I don't want to think about how. But she was basically molded to the chair. And they had to come try to remove her from it. You can't stay in one spot too long.
Yeah.
You got to move.
Well, hopefully they didn't have to use the jaws of life. I have heard some stories where people who play competitive video games or even people who are into immersion where they dress like their character or they dress in military gear and then they play the video game. They try to immerse themselves and even they'll use the restroom in like in a military way in battle. Like you don't leave your computer, you just go to the bathroom there and deal with it later.
Strange.
Because they're immersive, quote unquote, in that environment.
Wouldn't that be shouldn't you join the military then if you're going to go that far with it?
Yeah, that's, I mean, a lot of them are ex-military people who do those things, but some aren't. And it's just an odd or just an extreme form of escapism to where you'd rather pretend to be the thing rather than actually being the thing when you're very capable of doing so.
Right. Yeah. So many strange things. So many strange sub-genres and cultures and bizarre. Well, here's something that's kind of funny. I think we've all gone through a drive-through a time or two and probably have some interesting experiences. A lot of times you can't hear what the person's saying. And like the speaker box is all crackly and you get back and forth in the wrong orders, etc. Well, here's a few funny things that people have posted that have happened to them. People sharing their weirdest drive-thru stories. A lady heard this in the McDonald's drive-thru. The guy said, "We don't have root beer. Is Dr. Pepper okay?" And the guy says, "No, it's not okay. My wife's pregnant." She wanted root beer. It's not the guy's problem at the drive-thru. You got to go where there's root beer, man.
Yeah. No, I understand his pain, though. I love root beer, too. And it's, I mean, not that I have the urges of a pregnant woman, but right. I understand that that problem, but I do have a little more sympathy towards him because he's dealing with a woman that wants what she needs.
Needs the root beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. They say occasionally this person says they're in the drive-thru and the person still asks them if the order is to go. That could happen, I guess. You're just not thinking. It says a lady went through the drive-thru, ordered 4-piece nuggets, and got a box of pickles. She had a picture of it. It's the box, the nuggets box, and you open it up, and there's just the pickles in there that they put on hamburgers.
Interesting.
Did she win or lose? Depends if you like pickles, I guess.
Yeah, or if you consider that most chicken nuggets probably aren't actually chicken.
Right. Those are the nuggets, just without the breading.
Yeah.
Well, you just say, how would that happen? How did they make that mistake?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't even, I can't even understand how that would occur.
Well, there's some pretty epic mix-ups, I think, especially when they're really busy back there. They put the wrong things in the wrong boxes and they assume, and you have 2 or 3 people helping out. And so it's easy for miscommunications like that to happen, I guess, especially in like fast food.
Right. I feel for those people. I would not want to work in a drive-thru. I just think it would be high pressure.
Yeah.
High pressure, low pay, people are mad. Not a great situation.
Yeah, actually, this is a quick story. I was at I think, is a perfect example of that. I went to Sonic and I got a milkshake, I think, or something like that. And so I pulled up to the pay window, and I was waiting for them, and I just looked. I don't like staring inside because it can make both of us feel uncomfortable. So
you don't want to know where it's coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So usually I bring a book with me just to read while I'm waiting. But I just glance inside, and the girl and the guy, they're both young people. They were screaming at each other, like arguing about something.
People, they were working there?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, the employees.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, maybe this was a bad time to order a milkshake. But when my milkshake was ready, she turned around and said in a very polite, nice voice, like nothing was going on.
Right.
Gave it to me, said, thanks for coming, have a good day, closed the window, then they immediately started arguing.
That's weird.
Yeah, I just, I don't know what the...
That's like us on the radio.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
We're screaming at each other right before we come on air.
Yeah.
And then right after we go off. Yeah, that's bizarre. Was it good? Good milkshake?
Yeah, it was worth it for me, but I don't know about for that.
Wow. Well, I hope they worked out the problem. Yeah. Check the crime report later and see what happened. Last one here is weirdest drive-thru stories. This guy was working at a McDonald's, and he was trying to hand the cream out for the coffee to the guy, and he had a closed fist, and the guy in the car misinterpreted it and gave him one of those fist pounds. He thought he was giving him like a high five?
Yeah.
He said, no, I'm just giving you your cream. Oh, I've had a couple of drive-thru experiences where people have been a little too friendly. It's a little strange.
Yeah.
There's this one lady that used to work at a drive-thru, and I remember going through there a few times, and usually it was during work, you know, during lunch, so it'd be me and another guy working, and she'd always like lean, you know, a little too far forward and kind of size us up, and you know, well, gentlemen, you know, we're like, okay, just let's get on with the transaction here.
Yeah.
I don't know why. One time at a restaurant too, not a drive-thru, but a regular restaurant. The waitress was same sort of thing, trying to just be too like buddy or something, and actually sat down. It was just me and another guy sat down next to us and want chit chat. We're like, okay, well, I think trying to have good customer service, but took it too far, I think.
Yeah, I've seen younger waitresses do that when they want a good tip from usually younger guys when they're in a restaurant. I think that's not uncommon because they just want to be friendly. But yeah, sometimes they go a little too far. Perhaps maybe they think the customers are entranced with their personality. But actually, on the way back from my honeymoon, we were stopped in Arkansas. My wife and I, we went to Chick-fil-A. And it was the oddest exchange I've ever had with
somebody working at the restaurant?
Yes, thank you. A restaurant employee. The okay. word restaurant completely disappeared from my mind. Maybe I'm the one that had the problem. But
a Chick-fil-A-er, as it were?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a man, not a chick. But he was talking to us, asking us really odd questions. And my wife started feeling comfortable. I'm like, well, we just like her food, and thank you very much. And yeah, it was just kind of an odd... The whole restaurant had an odd atmosphere and working culture
really?
In it. People were hugging behind the counter. They were like giving high fives and like being really jolly, and... I'm glad they were so happy, but it is just an odd thing to see in the fast food world.
Like what? What were they asking you? Was it something you could talk about?
Yeah, they were just asking me. He asked me if I ever had been in the army, if I where I was heading, if I ever knew some people with certain names. I think things like that. Just really odd questions. I mean, some of them aren't odd, but there's people behind us waiting in line. It's a fast food restaurant. And he would just gaze at us for a couple seconds and then ask a question. I wasn't sure if it was personal or if he was asking us about the order. It was just an odd exchange.
Oh, that is strange. Yeah, trying to be really personable but taking it too far maybe.
Yeah.
There is a line of literally and also a line you don't want to cross because people are there to get their food and get out in a quick amount of time. They appreciate friendly, competent service, but they're not looking to be your buddy. I think that's the line.
Yeah, like I didn't want to be unfriendly. I appreciate his efforts, but it just seemed to me it was a little misdirected, perhaps.
You're not starting up a thing.
Yeah.
It's not going to carry on beyond the restaurant. It's over. Yeah. This is, of course, this one happened from the Star Telegram. This is so strange. You probably have seen this. It's a big headline. A huge misunderstanding. A contractor guts the wrong Fort Worth house.
I did not see that.
Yeah, contractor. He was supposed to go gut a house, but they went to the wrong one, and that the house they went to is being sold. It was up for sale, and the people that owned it, their son had used it when he went to TCU, I think, or some college, and so they were going to sell it now. And they went there, and everything was gone. The toilets, the doorbell, it was taken apart. The house was completely gutted, and so they reported it to the police. They thought somebody stole it. It'd be a weird way to go about doing it.
Yeah.
And so it made the news, and the contractor saw it, realized the mistake, they got the house numbers mixed up. So he came forward and said, that was our mistake. The police said, well, there's nothing we can do. It's not really a crime. It was sort of an accident. But good happy ending. The contractor is very honest about it, and they're going to work it out. Whether he buys it from them at the price they were selling, and then he, or just repairs everything, he's going to take care of it for him. So I think it's a good story in the sense that even though it was a pretty catastrophic error, both parties are honest and they're going to work it out and figure it out, and it doesn't need to be a big deal. But can you imagine? You go to your house you're trying to sell, and everything is gone. Not just, you know, you're missing furniture and stuff, but like they took the toilets. You can imagine how puzzled you would be by that.
Yeah, well, that's, I think everyone has that in the back of their minds when they go away for a trip and come back to their house. When they open the door, there's always perhaps a small chance that nothing will exist in there anymore because someone took it all. And yeah, that would be, because I think people, their first reaction is probably being upset that people stole things, but then it probably turned to wonderment at why everything was gone, even the minutest little fixture and everything like that.
Yeah, they're very thorough.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that actually wanted their house gutted, they didn't give the contractor a key. They said, don't worry about it, kick the door in. And so they did, but on the wrong house. So they go show up and kick the door in and just start taking the place apart. I think the house was on sale. They were selling it for about like $370,000 or something, too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a shack or anything.
Yeah, I think that's what every contractor wants to hear once in their life. Like, oh, just go kick the door in. We don't care about that.
Take it apart. Yeah. So anyway, really strange story there out of the Dallas, Fort Worth area. But it looks like it has a happy ending. The people that had their house taken apart, they say, the contractor is bending over backwards for us. We are so grateful that he is honest and admitted the mistake, and he wants to reconcile. So he, otherwise you'd have to pursue legal action, but he's being upfront about it, and so it sounds like it'll work out pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, because my father-in-law, he was a framer in construction, just hearing him talk about modern practices, there aren't a whole lot of honest foremen and things like that out there. Or at least I'm sure there are, but just not as many as there used to be. A lot of people cut corners and maybe try to cheat people and that sort of thing. So it is good that he's honest and he's doing his best to make the best of the situation.
It is hard. It is hard to find somebody that'll be honest. And that's, I think, if somebody has a reputation for it, they can do, I think, really well in almost any field.
Yeah.
Because it is sort of a rare thing today. Makes me wonder, though, if a framer does something illegal, or somebody accuses them of it, are they being framed? Has a framer been framed? Something to think about.
Yeah.
Not for real long, but just...
I should ask him.
So. Yeah. I was framed. I'm a framer. Kia David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. And stop and check out thetrumpet.com today as well. Here are some of the headlines. American withdrawal presents opportunity from Europe. That's from Spiegel Online. Germany's taboos, once a bulwark against the far right, may now be enabling it. New York Times. Is America no longer the Middle East's greatest power from the national interest? And have U.S.-Europe relations changed forever? So there's quite a few headlines there and analysis pieces as well. Check those out at thetrumpet.com. Also being Monday, there's Just the Best Literature. Watch Jerusalem, new episode from over the weekend, and Music for Life as well. So make sure you listen for those programs. Coming up here on KPCG, this is Trumpet Radio Live. I'm Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau here today. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, do that at KPCGFM. And if you'd like to email us, send those to comments at KPCG.FM. You've got some interesting articles for us here, Abraham, we're going to spend some time with. This first one is from foreignpolicy.com. And the title is "The Queen Doesn't Need Saving from Donald Trump." This is British royals aren't wilting flowers; they're diplomatic weapons. And Elizabeth II is one of the best. There is a change, I guess, in some nations, right? Donald Trump here in the U.S., Le Pen maybe in France. Who knows what's happening? You know, she's getting more popular. The populist movement, and so the royal family is sort of being looked at in a little bit of a different way, I guess. But this piece from Foreign Policy says that they're doing okay.
Yeah, this is a really interesting piece, and I think they make an excellent point, just that in an age when, especially in all the tumult surrounding Donald Trump, his visiting of foreign powers, his involvement in different issues, that this reporter here, John Lloyd, he says that if Donald Trump does come over for a state visit, that the Queen can handle herself more so than probably any person in the world. And he does. It all stems from this this resentment in Britain towards Donald Trump. Basically, the British House of Commons is voting or debating on whether he should even be allowed to visit Britain. And they were forced to do this because of petitions from the public. If the petitions reach a certain amount of signatures, you do have to vote it or debate upon it in the Commons. And last week we talked about the comments by John Bercow, the Speaker of the House, who went out of protocol and said some very demeaning things about Donald Trump that he shouldn't have said. Some things on policy he is not even in his realm to speak on. And so there's this great debate in Britain about whether he should even be allowed to come to the country, which is a completely ridiculous and foolish thing to do, especially when he has acted very amiable towards your country. It is a very foolish situation to be in. If he does come over, he will be talking with the Queen quite a bit.
Yeah, it's so strange because just, you know, in light of that thought that he shouldn't be allowed, President Trump shouldn't be allowed to even go over there. And you look at, like, what's happening on the ground versus what's happening with the media and the intellectual elite, I guess, mostly radical left. If you look at the media and the radical left, they're acting like, you know, this is the worst leader we've ever seen. But if you look on the ground, it seems like the people here in the U.S., at least half or more, some in Europe and different places, they are clamoring for these type of leaders, for better or worse, that are stronger, that come out and say what they feel, are actually trying to implement some policies. And so when I hear things like, you know, the U.K. doesn't want him to come, I wonder, what's the real feeling on the ground? Is that how people feel? I mean, it might be. Or is it kind of a media-made storm like it is here in the U.S.?
Well, that's a point he makes, is that Donald Trump has gotten underneath the liberal skin. And so they're really the ones causing the problem. I don't think most of the populace, even if they don't like him, they're not opposed to such a visit. Or to his participation in their policies and in their foreign affairs, because with the Britain leaving the EU, they do need to cling to the United States. That's really their only option. So I think it's very foolish by the liberals, who are really just indulging their ideology rather than looking what's best for the country. But as this article brings out, if the left has such a big problem with Donald Trump, they should look back at the other people who have visited Britain and Queen Elizabeth has entertained for the sake of political advantage. And the two people who stand out the most that they have given the honor of a state visit, because it is an honor to visit the Queen, to be in Buckingham Palace, to enjoy the state, really the state pomp and ceremony that very few countries can offer. And the two they point out were Nicolae Ceaușescu, something like that. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. He was the communist leader of Romania during the Cold War. He came over in 1978, and he was communist, anti-West, but they invited him over with the purpose of creating a wedge between him and the rest of the communist bloc, and it succeeded. And he was able to fall. He actually fell from power. And partly because of this diplomatic weapon of using the Queen to really maneuver them into their purpose. And the other one was Robert Mugabe, terrible dictator in Zimbabwe, ridiculed, well, really took all the wealth from his own people, extortioned the economy, kicked a lot of white farmers off their legal land and gave it to other people. And he was given the honor of a state visit. And so when you can, even with Xi Jinping last year, a Communist Party leader who very brutal, imprisons hundreds of people against their will, governs a country with no human rights or very little. If those people are given the honor, Donald Trump is nowhere near in the same category as those people. So it is an odd hypocrisy, and it is just almost a fantastic reaction from the left to even object to such a thing when they are the greatest superpower and are Britain's greatest ally, that they should view him as more of an enemy than even communist leaders.
Yeah, well, and even if you want to talk about as U.S. leaders, President Obama was very disrespectful to the Queen when he went over there, did not follow the proper protocol, definitely is anti, you know, British Empire, definitely anti Winston Churchill, made no secret of that. He went over there, and nobody batted an eye at it. Didn't he give the Queen an iPod with his speeches on it?
Yes,
I'm sure she listens to that all the time. You know, just stuff like that were really just distasteful, and yet nobody batted an eye. And so again, it just exposes the hypocrisy and being so outraged now about letting President Trump go over there. What has he ever done? He hasn't done anything. Other than made a couple of comments people didn't like, but also he's made some comments people have loved.
Yeah.
Depends on what side you're on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and Michelle Obama hugged the Queen, which is probably the greatest breach of protocol in the 20th century by an American first family to do such a thing. I mean, it's not catastrophic, but still it does show an ignorance and a lack of respect in a huge
right.
way.
And this is the same, remember, same administration that goes and bows to dictators.
Yes.
And bows to our enemies.
Yeah.
So don't make it out like, you know, people could make it out like, well, that's just the way they were. No, that was purposeful towards the royalty there in Britain, because they go over and bow towards everybody and anybody else.
Yeah.
And so obviously they were very concerned about even going too far in terms of how they treated other leaders from dictatorial nations, and then they go to our closest ally traditionally and treat them with disrespect. It was pretty obvious.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and that's what this article gets into. Just the Queen, she's been through the Battle of Britain. She faced the Nazis. She was a member of, she was a mechanic during World War II. She's been through every decade since then as Queen since 1952. And so, I mean, she's in the world today. She is the most knowledgeable and the most potent diplomatic weapon in the world. Or I shouldn't maybe call her weapon, but the most seasoned and well-trained diplomat in the whole world. And so she's a huge asset for the British government to use, not necessarily to force people to do things, but she can coerce people through her opinions, through her by using state visits to feel for their opinions and everything. And so she's a huge asset, an unbelievable asset to the British government.
Yeah, her opinion matters, and she knows how to get it across in a proper way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of value in that. And that leads into the next story you wanted to bring up, too, which is a really interesting one. Speaking of the Nazis, of course, she lived through that time period. This is a write-up from The Guardian. SSGB review, Britain is under Nazi rule and I can't help laughing at the oppression. Kind of a funny title, but they're talking about this new, there's been a few shows lately that have come out where it shows the UK and America under Nazi rule. And so these shows have, they're starting to change some of the public's opinion, I guess, about what the Nazis were about. And it's sort of revisionist history, I guess, to the max.
Yeah. These the two shows, SSGB is a BBC show that just aired last night in Britain. And it does show Britain in 1941, London. That Britain lost the Battle of Britain. Winston Churchill was killed by court-martial by Hitler. And so Britain is now under Nazi rule. The American version is called The Man in the High Castle. I think it's been on Amazon. And it's about New York. If the Nazis won World War II and they occupy, half of America is German, half of America is Japanese. And it shows the occupation of New York in particular. And so both these shows, they've been pretty popular. I did see one funny reaction, though, from it. Someone tweeted yesterday that the most unifying force on Earth is when historians watch a BBC drama.
Because they're all mad.
Yeah, because they all criticize it. So I thought, and rightfully so, BBC has some dreadful programming. It's very revisionist. Both these TV shows are based on novels written about counterfactual history. So they're not meant to be historically accurate. They're based on novels. But they are being consumed by a wide audience. And I think it does mark an important point in how people view Nazis and how people view the history of Germany and where you humanize the Nazis in lots of ways. In fact, in Man in the High Castle, I know that the main character, I think he's played by Rufus Sewell, he has doubts about the Nazi idea, and so he starts combating, starts having doubts about whether the Nazi regime is good or not and has an internal conflict. So it puts a human face in it. It almost makes them like sympathetic figures with moral dilemmas that they have to face. When that's not probably the best way to view that history.
Yeah, I mean, just think how taboo this subject would have been, I don't know, 30 years ago or, you know, whatever. They would never. I mean, can you imagine pitching this idea shortly after World War II? Like, hey, what if we did this show showing the Nazis ruling and, you know, and people would be outraged. They'd be outraged by it, I would think. I mean, that's just, you'd have a whole generation of the people there that fought the Nazis, and that went in and liberated the concentration camps. And if you've seen any of the documentaries, which I'm sure you have, on World War II and on some of those men that went in and liberated those camps, to their dying day, they couldn't talk about what they saw, how horrifying it was. And it shocked them and it disturbed them so much. They could talk about a lot of things, but when it came to that, they couldn't even discuss what they saw there. How would they feel about programming like this? I think that's something to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even George Patton, the perhaps the most fiery American general, he couldn't even stomach going into a concentration camp. And in fact, Eisenhower is the one who went in himself because he wanted to see it for himself so he could tell people it did happen. But I think with these shows, there's not necessarily anything wrong with them. Can be foolishly displayed, but I think the biggest problem with them is that people don't have enough history to know how wrong they are, that they're just pure fiction. And I think that's the issue, is people have a right to write things, and that's their freedom. However, the problem is I think it's a poor use of money to depict things like this anyway, but also that people don't have enough of a historical understanding to even appreciate how counterfactual it is, that they replace their understanding of how Hitler came to power, how the Nazi regime actually worked, how satanic the ideology is, and they replace it with these TV shows. And that's, they accept this as history, or they accept the personalities of these Nazi people as real people when they're just fiction.
And I haven't seen these shows, but I'm just from some of the screen grabs I've seen and some of the write-ups, it seems like the premise is sort of like, well, life carries on just under the Nazis. Life wasn't good in Nazi Germany, even for the Germans. I mean, they may have had their time when it was okay, depending on who you were, but it depended on who you were and what you did. And, you know, there was all sorts of terrible things that happened there. And, to the Germans too. So it wasn't a good regime. It's not like they could come in and, you know, life just carries on. You just speak a different language or something. So I'm not sure. Is that how these shows are depicting it? Where it's just kind of life as normal with some drama, but you just have a different ruling party, basically?
Generally, I think it does show that, like in SSGB, women are generally used in a pretty bad way.
Okay.
In general. And in Man in the High Castle, It does depict children who have mental disability as being removed from society.
Okay, yeah, which is accurate. That's what happened.
Yeah. So those details do have correct. However, I think they are still pretty generous with how the Nazis would have treated a lot of people. And especially when I'm just rereading John Lukacs' book, 5 Days in London, in 1940, when Churchill was deciding whether to talk with Hitler or not, and he decided not to. And that was really one of the great turning points of the war, when he decided to keep fighting on. And when you read that, when you go over the history, you realize that each man in that room in Churchill's cabinet was willing to die for their country. They were willing to, as Churchill even told his own daughter, if you see Germans coming, get a butcher's knife out and take out as many as you can before they get you. So, I mean, there was no peaceful conquest of Great Britain. And, I mean, these shows do have some admirable historical information in them. I don't want to deride them too much. The big problem is people's view of them, how they accept them into their fund of knowledge. But I think they're far too generous in showing that the Nazis were utterly brutal. They would have enslaved us. It's not that they would have allowed us to enter into their society. We would have been enslaved. Much like the Japanese used prisoners of war. They used the British prisoners of war to build railways, bridges. And that's what would have happened to a lot of people, especially as Germany eventually would have fought probably Japan and Russia in a greater scale. They would have used Americans and British people as slaves. And I think it completely misses the pure satanic ideas behind it and how it would have been a scourge to the earth. There would have been no dancing and kind of society people could live in. They would have become more and more brutal as time went on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, and so this write-up here at the Guardian, the reviewer, the author, says they can't help laugh at the oppression. I guess they're saying that it was pretty ridiculous the way they were showing the Nazi oppression in these shows.
Yeah, he didn't agree with how some of the dialogue, and they made the Germans almost seem British. And so that's why he was laughing, where it almost seemed like a something from Monty Python, where you have a British person trying to be a German one. And some people didn't see it like that. They actually liked it. But I think that's the other main problem with this, is that it makes, if people laugh at this, and they laugh at the comical idea that Germany could win, they completely underestimate modern Germany and the current threat from Europe. And I think that's the big thing, is they're desensitizing the threat of modern-day Germany to creating something exactly like these shows depict, and that is the conquest of United States and Britain by a German power.
Yeah, and they're romanticizing it in a way.
Yes.
Even if it's shown in a way maybe where it does show some bad things, it still is romanticizing it. And they do that with a lot of programs.
Yeah.
Where maybe the character is a bad individual, but they're sort of romanticized in a way. Where the ruling party is bad, but it's kind of romanticized, and it does break down some of the horror of what actually happened and some of the real historical facts.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest danger is this, is you'll have Generation Z, Generation Y, the younger people who really don't have a living connection to World War II because their grandparents have died or there aren't a whole lot of veterans left from that. People aren't reading anymore. They're doing the house party apps on their phones. Yeah. You're going to have a generation grow up and they'll accept this as a narrative, or they'll think Nazis were genteel, sophisticated people who, once you conquered them, they were very generous to you. That's not the way it is at all. And it makes us almost makes conquest palatable to us rather than having the character to fight against it with every fiber of your being.
Do you know what the ratings are on these shows? Are they pretty good?
Man, the High Castle has done pretty well. This just aired, so I'm not too sure how it will turn out. But a lot of historians have been ripping on it, so I'm not sure how well it will fare.
Yeah. Well, you know, and these production companies are in the business of making money. And so they do try to give people what they think they want. And you talked about this a couple of months ago, I think it was on Trumpet Hour, about how they did the research at Harvard, was it?
Yes.
Where a lot of the people, young people, said being under a dictatorship wouldn't be that bad, or a police state or something.
Yeah, they weren't adverse to having an undemocratic form of government, whether that's a coup, a small select group of people running the country. there are a lot of young people who are actually more favorable to that. It's still the minority, but it's a lot higher than it used to be about 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. It's just communist, which is, you know, what is in a lot of those universities, unfortunately, is that communist thinking. Yeah, that's really, really pretty shocking. And so, yeah, that's you can read the rest of that write-up at The Guardian. SSGB review, Britain is under Nazi rule, and I can't help laughing at the oppression. So they're talking about some of those shows. And it's a really good point you brought up. People are ignoring Europe today. It's kind of this is kind of put in the past, like, it'll never happen again, so we could talk about it. Well, that's not the case.
Yeah, laughing at the... It's almost people can laugh at the idea of Germany conquering America or Britain, when in fact it's closer to reality than they could even imagine.
Well, and in some ways, I mean, people are almost begging for it, because who's going to stand up and resist it?
Yeah.
People don't resist anything. You know, if you can't resist anything in your private life, you certainly aren't going to resist anything in your national life.
Exactly.
Right. So pretty interesting. Those are some pretty good write-ups. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us here. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Abraham Blondeau on 101.3 KPCG. Have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.